Welcome to the Solid Verbal.
The Solid Verbal.
Come after me! I'm a man! I'm 40!
I've heard so many players say, well, I want to be happy. You want to be happy for a day? Eat a steak.
It's that woo woo!
And now, Dan and Ty.
Welcome back to the Solid Verbal, boys and girls. Ty Hildenbrandt here. Dan Rubenstein over there. SolidVerbal@gmail.com, as always, is the email. More on that in a second. You can also find us on Facebook, on Twitter, on Instagram, and most importantly on iTunes at itunes.com/solidverbal. Dan Rubenstein, what up?
You know, not too much. Will Greer has a new home. Did you see that?
Going to West Virginia.
Am I putting you on the spot? Okay, good. Yes, West Virginia, where he will serve a year out for his transfer status and also a few games for his suspension for violating the PED policy of the NCAA, I believe. So that's a good new home. They have experience with transfer quarterbacks coming in from big schools in Florida.
He's going to throw the ball.
He is going to throw the ball. It's spring practice for a bunch of teams right now, and I don't get super into spring practice for Oregon. Do you get into spring practice for Notre Dame? You have a big quarterback battle. I guess technically Oregon does as well. Do you get into it?
I don't get into it. I follow from afar a few of the key talking points on some secret message boards and blogs and whatnot.
Of course.
A couple things that really draw my interest. But in terms of like, oh man, the two deep is looking great. I'm not really my cup of tea, no.
Yeah, it's the couple things that I've seen about Oregon. It's just sort of how it's Dakota Prukop, the new FCS transfer quarterback coming in. And of course, Brady Hoke, and he's changing around the defense and how people are responding to that. But yeah, you just hope nobody gets hurt and everybody is on the same page with new coaches. I think that's good.
So here's what we're doing tonight, Dan.
What do we have?
We got so many questions last week.
It's unbelievable.
It really is unbelievable. We're going to do our best to go through maybe some of the old, definitely a lot of the new. Again, we had a run of coaching interviews. If you haven't had a chance to check those out.
Oh, they're great.
Yeah, go on back through. Go to our website, solidverbal.com. Going out to SBNation.com and look up all of our stuff. Subscribe to the show. Tell your friends about the show if you like what we do. But certainly go back and listen to some of those coaching interviews that we've done over the last 5, 6, 7 weeks now. And get yourself caught up. This is sort of our opportunity to take a deep breath. Take a deep breath, to allow people to get some advice. Just have a casual conversation with some friends here on the show tonight. Yes. It is our email show.
Congratulations, Skippy. You've got mail.
You've got mail
on the Solid Verbal.
We pay homage whenever we can to the Verballers out there. I would have played that sound last week, except I couldn't find the cord for my iPad.
I have a new sound for the show, by the way.
Oh?
And it's still Brower. It's still Brooklyn Nine-Nine. Because I feel like once we find our lane, we should just keep that autopilot on and go. So we had Brower. What's his name on the show? You don't even watch the show, do you? It's
no,
Captain Holtz, I believe, is his character's name.
Okay.
And so the last one we had was, well, we had Somebody Got Murdered, which is the Andy Samberg character. And then the last one we had was Pain.
That's it.
Yeah. So in a very similar sounding one, and there'll be a lot of opportunities to use this during the season, even before the season, it's I have adrenaline coursing through my veins. Coursing.
Okay.
From this week's episode. So yeah, we're just going hard down the line, Brower.
Hard down the line, Brower.
Yeah. So but yeah, we do have a ton of questions. A lot of spillover from last week. I put out the call for questions to both our Twitter account and Facebook and email. And then what did I ask for this week? I'm looking up the tweet right now. I just figure if we can give people a direction with questions, especially with things that we specialize in. So it's college football. I put down the Heisman Trophy, of which you are a voter, the most esteemed trophy in college football.
Thank you. Yes.
Hanson General, weddings. The wedding seasons have already begun for each of us for 2016. Jumping in pools and dives, recipes, dating. And this one, I feel like it might be the secret passion of yours that you really haven't revealed, and that's bathroom etiquette.
Oh boy. I could talk for eons thoughts about that. Yeah.
Yeah. And we have eons because there's no actual physical tape. We can just keep on going.
Let's keep on going. All right. Let's start here at the very top of your document. This is in no particular order.
I will say we're going to front load with college football. So as the episode goes on, it will typically just get weirder and more random, I would say.
As we lose interest in college football, right?
Springtime.
As we are wont to do.
Yeah.
Then we'll start talking about bathroom etiquette and burritos and and whatnot. But let's start at the very top.
Those are tied together, by the way.
Correct. Let's start at the top with Matt Morris, presumably not the former MLB starting pitcher, the right-hander.
I choose to believe it is.
He says, which is more likely, Chip Kelly coaching college football in 4 years,
right,
or Jim Harbaugh back in the NFL? To that question, Matt, I say, ooh, that is a very good question.
Yeah.
I feel like the answer is probably Jim Harbaugh back in the NFL. Here's why.
You think ambition is stronger than desperation?
I don't know if it's so much ambition with Jim Harbaugh. I feel like that would be the normal recipe for a coach. Jim Harbaugh, though, as we are slowly starting to learn, may not follow the normal recipe for a human being or a college football coach.
Quick jump in here, right here, Ty. Obviously, you did not read the John U. Bacon book just about Jim Harbaugh. He is an Ann Arbor for the long haul.
A few ticks away from what you might consider normal
is
Jim Harbaugh. And everywhere he's been, he's burnt himself out pretty quickly.
Right.
Not the kind
and
of guy.
And others around him, yeah.
And others around him, sure. Not the kind of guy who just... It might not be anything with loyalty or ambition. He just might burn out in his current situation. Chip Kelly, I could see settling into a groove with the Niners, with some NFL team. I don't know how long he's going to be in San Francisco, but he's an X's and O's guy. He's a bit of a mad scientist when it comes to schemes and bucking the trend. That seems to be Chip Kelly's thing. So I can see that having more of a shelf life in the NFL than Jim Harbaugh really having a shelf life anywhere. Does that make sense?
It does make sense. I think the two of these coaches, I think if there is a parallel, it's that they really do like controlling not just football stuff, but various aspects of their lives within the coaching realm. Whether it's Jim Harbaugh jumping around to the South for recruiting, going to concerts. He loves sort of controlling the message with Michigan football. He loves getting on the field and coaching. Chip Kelly, similarly, you know, the sports science stuff, the personnel input that he wanted and got with Philly. I think that is probably more attractive and that is more likely to happen and work in college. So I'm going to say Chip Kelly coaching college football in 4 years. And you have no idea the pain it's going to cause me when he is in Cardinal and Gold in Los Angeles in 5 years, four years, 6 years, whatever it is. You hope Clay Helton works out for USC, but it's not or Auburn in 2 years, whatever the case may be. Could you imagine Chip Kelly in Auburn, say Alabama?
Or anywhere in the SEC.
That'd be wonderful. I'm going to go with that because of the control factor.
Okay. Moving on, I'm going to pick another.
Hit me.
College football question. I think this is a really good question. This one comes to us from our friend Kevin. A few ticks down on the old doc. He says, how should fans feel when trending up programs have large assistant coach turnover?
Right.
He's asking this, he says, as an ASU and Todd Graham boy band headset fan.
Yes.
That again is Kevin. I have a pretty easy answer to this. Todd Graham's been pretty successful wherever he's been. And I feel like you got to look at a coach's track record to decide whether or not you're going to feel comfortable with whatever he brings aboard next. If it were James Franklin, and to some degree it is James Franklin at Penn State, he lost Bob Stoops, his coordinator. He lost Herb Hand. Massive overhaul in terms of his assistant coaches. Now, he did well at Vanderbilt, but it was by and large with that same group of assistants that he brought with him to State College. Now those people go elsewhere. I think his feet are a little bit more to the fire. Todd Graham.
Sure.
Todd Graham's been successful for a long time now. At many different programs, we love to make the joke, but he is a good football coach. I feel much, much better about Todd Graham losing assistance than I do a guy like a James Franklin. So I'm okay with it if you're a boy band headset fan, one who likes Todd Graham. I think ASU is going to be just fine.
Yeah, I think when you lose assistance like Todd Graham has done, and with one specific guy this year, when it's not a lateral move, when it's a jump up with Mike Norvell taking a head coaching job, at Memphis. Those are things that I think Todd Graham can sell. Our assistants have, we've developed assistants into the level where they are interviewing and getting head coaching jobs. That is something that is an indicator of a program either in the right direction or that is just very good, which I think you can argue that ASU has been very good. They haven't been, you know, great and conference winning yet, but there are a number of reasons to feel good about ASU. It is when there is that jumping ship thing.
Yeah.
Whether it's, you know, whatever, with Penn State firing a coordinator, an offensive line coach leaving, a defensive line coach taking, I think it's fair to say, a lateral job, the defensive coordinator job at Tennessee and at Penn State. I think that's reasonably lateral.
Yep.
That's when it becomes worrisome. I don't think ASU is quite in the worrisome level yet. And there are times when coaches leave for all sorts of reasons. Tony Franklin leaving Cal for Middle Tennessee. That's a little odd, but he's from that area of the country. And that seems like it might be partially based in personal reasons. So somewhat understandable, but it is that jumping ship thing when a program is trending downward and assistants are leaving where I think the worry has to be. So I think it's much more on the James Franklin side than the Todd Graham side.
All right. I'm going to go one more college football question, and then we're going to jump in here. We've got a bunch of weird ones, but
what do you have?
This one actually was on our document last time and we didn't get a chance to address it. I want to talk strategy with you.
Please do.
All right, this one came to us from Waiting for Kickoff on Twitter, JaredMichael928. It's not on our current doc, but I do have it from before.
All right.
And he wants to know, if you could completely erase one college football program from the game, remove them like they never existed,
right?
Who would it be and why? I am going to mix this question up a little bit. Sort of puts us on the spot to say, pick one team, pick one year, gone forever. Instead, right. I'm going to ask you, what would your strategy be for determining who that team should be?
I'm just going to go with a team I'm sort of sick of hearing about without actual on-field. You know, the attention that this team and this program gets is not nearly in line with their ability on the field or just to be interesting at all.
Right.
Do you have any guess with that preamble?
I don't have a specific team in mind. I do have a strategy in mind, and I feel like I feel like the strategy that you lay out there is the common answer.
Yes. All right,
I put some thought into this one. We're essentially talking like a pseudo college football butterfly effect, right? You can go back, and if you remove one team from the game, it's got a little bit of a back to the future feel to it, where presumably that would have long-lasting ramifications, right?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
This is an unbelievable question, Dan.
So who are you erasing from the college football topography?
Here's my strategy.
Yeah.
And I don't know which team this is, but conventional wisdom would be that you find the team that either you're sick of hearing about or a team that stood in your team's way of winning something big and you just wipe them out.
Okay.
Something like this, I think, requires a little bit more thinking. So what I think you got to do is you got to follow the threads back, Dan. You got to look to see how the platform of major college football affected the players who were on that roster and what they did moving forward. All right. So for example, here's an easy example. 1995 Florida State.
Sure.
If you take away that platform, that exposure, that opportunity, there's a good chance that Danny Cannell isn't a college football analyst.
Okay.
All right.
Yes.
He's not on your TV. He's not wearing that sweater suit
Very
combo.
Very easily ignored, by the way.
He doesn't look like someone with a laser disc room.
Yeah.
All right. I'm not saying this is my answer, but I am providing this as an example for what my strategy would be. I would not pick the team that annoys me.
Right.
I would pick the team that, by removing them, I removed, let's say, more annoyances in the future.
So this person ask a specific team or just a program
in general?
He said a
specific team. See, I don't have a specific team. I have a specific strategy for this.
See, I have a program that if I could remove any one program from the current landscape of college football and have just as much fun watching college football without them, I wouldn't choose a bad one because that's just, they're all, you know, their fan base is already, there is a putting a fan base out of misery element to it, but I don't think that's that fun. I'm choosing the University of Texas.
Mm.
I don't know what Texas has given me recently. In terms of entertainment, in terms of intrigue, in terms of star players. There just hasn't been anything entertaining about Texas, and it's not fun to just constantly see them lose 24-0 to Iowa State, as much as that is fun in an isolated way. I'm happy to move on from not hearing about, oh, the Longhorn Network is evil and it's going to ruin everything. Oh, remember 2005? Yay, woo! I don't need Texas. I'm good.
Ironically enough, I feel like there are a lot of Texas fans who may have also picked Texas.
Yeah, no, that's true too.
All right. Moving on, we'll go non-football.
Yes.
What's your top three bucket list travel locations from trip? Ooh.
I'd very much like to go to Tokyo. I would like to go. I have not been to Italy. And after seeing what our friends at Eater.com, it's a website, did with their travels to Mexico City, I feel like that is my Mount Olympus for taco consumption. So I'm going to say Tokyo, Mexico City, and somewhere, in, you know, I don't know where to start with in Italy, but those are my three answers right now. What about you?
I will say broadly Europe.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe more.
You got to be more specific.
More broadly, somewhere over the Atlantic Ocean. I kind of want to see Barcelona.
That, I think that's a great answer.
Barcelona has always intrigued me. Mm-hmm. I've heard a lot of good things about London, but I don't know if that's top three on the bucket list. I'm inclined to say Australia as well, but I've heard mixed reviews of going to Australia.
What are the mixed reviews?
The mixed reviews are that it's just a lot like the United States.
I don't think that's necessarily
true. I've never been. I don't know. Somewhat. They got kangaroos, so it can't be that much like the United States.
Do you and wife Kate have any bigger trips planned at the moment?
Not at the moment. We will be visiting Niagara Falls.
Okay.
In short
order. That is a start.
It is a start.
Same region.
Bucket list, I'm going to say Barcelona. I'll say Rome. And I don't know. You've been to Argentina. I've been intrigued by Argentina. I've never been. So I'll say those are my top three.
Yeah, you can go Patagonia at the very bottom. Great wildlife and hiking. Does Kate want to go somewhere specific? Have you never traveled?
I think Kate just wants to go anywhere. She's fine going anywhere.
So you've done the honeymoon, but you haven't had like a big trip together.
We did California a couple of years ago.
That counts. Was that for a wedding?
That was for a wedding, yeah.
Okay. I'm just talking you and Kate.
Yeah.
I don't know how I would combine your names. Kildenbrand.
Ty Cat? I don't know.
No. All right. Next question. What do we have? Those are our answers. I've got a good question about the Peisman.
All right. Go ahead.
A couple people have asked about the Peisman and eligibility. Can we make a rule on the Peisman that a play with, quote, tackle eligible player is not counted? It's kind of a head start. And somebody else wanted to know about not counting 260-pound, Alabama hyper-athletic outside linebackers and those types.
All right.
I will say this. We do strongly lean towards linemen. So like 275, 280 plus. And they very much have to look like, and this is just sort of a judgment call, they have to look like they're not fully comfortable carrying the ball.
Right.
Whether it be in scooping up a fumble, whether it be in catching a tipped pass, something like that. If you don't know, the Peisman Trophy is something that SB Nation gives out to the best non-offensive or defensive skill player making a unexpected or trick play with the ball. And we gave it out last season to Ashton Henderson of Southeastern Louisiana. But yes, there is an element of we want larger rather than bigger, if that makes sense.
Okay.
Yeah.
Let me jump in here with another one.
Please.
Non-football, and then we'll go back to football.
Yes.
Gregory Lane Nichols.
Good name.
He says he likes road trips. What's your favorite car-related road trip you've ever been on?
Yeah.
I have a very easy one.
Oh, please.
I drove 12 hours from Allentown down to Athens, Georgia with East Coast Elliott back in 2009, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
Elliott got a speeding ticket in a construction zone driving my car somewhere in Fairfax, Virginia, Northern Virginia. Right. That made for an interesting trip from that point forward. But Georgia's great. It was a game against Arizona State.
Yeah.
It rained cats and dogs at Sanford Stadium, but the University of Georgia treated us very, very well. Mm-hmm. And listened to horrible pop radio on Sirius XM the entire trip down. You remember that story? I listened,
of course,
to the same station the whole way down because of a bet, and it wasn't worth it. But
that was dumb.
Definitely the trip down to Athens.
How, may I jump in? How personal did the convert, like, Did you and Elliot break down any pre-existing barriers in terms of what you knew about each other and your sort of past personal lives, interests, stuff like that? Did you break? Do you feel like?
He didn't touch my leg, if that's what you're asking.
No, but, no. Not physical barriers.
Okay.
Like, did any sentence begin with either one of you with, I was once with this girl and?
Gosh, I can't remember what happened yesterday, let alone.
Okay.
7 years ago.
Is he, generally speaking, a more open person with how he feels about things in life, about his own life? Because it's kind of a bummer when people are just like, yeah, let's talk about the Phillies.
Did you meet East Coast Elliot at my wedding?
Yes, I did.
East Coast Elliot.
He seemed very happy and open.
East Coast Elliot will talk to you about literally anything. He is a total and complete wild card. He will talk to you about anything.
Will he probe? Again.
Oh, he's a prober. Yeah.
Oh, good. Because you're not.
Someone's going to cut that bit out and send it to us. I know. But yes.
You're not a natural prober.
I'm getting better at it.
Okay, good. I appreciate that.
This is a weird conversation. I'm getting better at that.
My answer would be last spring, in terms of both who my company and where we went with the lady friends, went from Atlanta to Charleston to Asheville, North Carolina to Nashville, sort of bookended by two weddings. And it was great from a food perspective, great from a cities I haven't been to perspective. I had not spent a ton of time in Atlanta, had never been to Charleston or Nashville. So it was good from a seeing new things perspective. And also, as I've been dating people, and I'm no longer looking to date anybody else, but one of the things in the back of my mind when I'm trying to figure out is, you know, if this could be a relationship, is could I be on a road trip with this person? I think it's important to me to recognize whether or not I could talk to somebody for at minimum 3 hours with no escape clause.
All right.
And I have, not for the sole reason, but I have sort of ended a situation because of like, I don't know that I could do 3 or 4 hours with this person. I don't know that, you know, they'd get along with my family in a sort of meaningful way. And part of that is the road trip thing. And I've also been on a road trip with my family and the lady friend, and it went great. So I think that's key. But yes, from a food perspective, I think it's important. If there are two cities you haven't been to in the same region, nail them down. If you have never been to Portland and Seattle, fly up over there. If you've never been to, you know, New Orleans and Austin, go for that. You know, from a food perspective, I think that's a great idea. Just nail two cities at once, eat your way through them, see the sights. I think that's the way to go.
All right.
And do it with a significant other if you're trying to test it.
You're giving me a perfect segue into a question here from Matthew Monty.
What do you got?
He says that his buddy scheduled a wedding in New Orleans on the same day as LSU Alabama.
Yes.
He probably can't afford tickets. Question is, do I watch at home in protest or do I go to New Orleans? I feel this is about as easy an answer as you're ever going to get on this show.
Okay. What is your answer?
The answer is undeniably yes, go to New Orleans for this.
Yeah, go to New Orleans for the wedding. And by the way, weddings are not, unless it's a very distant wedding and it's on the same day as like your team in the national championship game and you know there's no way you'll be able to watch it, go to a wedding. Be a human rather than a college football fan. If you can juggle both, which I think you can do almost all of the time,
Listen to me.
Go to New Orleans.
This is Louisiana we're talking about here.
Yeah.
Football, particularly LSU football, anywhere in the state, anywhere in the general Louisiana quadrant of the country, it takes on a far more intense order of magnitude than anything you find anywhere else in the country.
Yeah.
And that's no disservice to any other college football program where they're intense about their teams. But New Orleans is a little bit different. So if you're at a wedding on that day in New Orleans, I guarantee you there are going to be other LSU and or Bama fans there watching the game at a bar, streaming the game on a phone, maybe drinking a little bit more intensely than they would otherwise. I kind of think that would be a cool setting to watch a game, and you'll find a way to watch the game.
Sure.
During the wedding, because there are going to be other people there. You guys can share in the blame if the bride or groom or any of the parents take exception with you watching the game. So I would definitely go to NOLA.
The only person that loses if you protest going to New Orleans is you. That is the only person, because New Orleans is great and you should go to New Orleans for any excuse you can find.
All right. Moving on.
Yes.
Matt Williamson. Hello, Matt.
Hey, what's up?
What is unique about Oklahoma's offense, Dan?
It's a good question. I believe he's an Oklahoma fan. I believe.
I would hope so.
I would say the balance and adaptivity, the ability to adapt that Bob Stoops in hiring offensive coordinators with different styles and success. I mean, you look at what he's done right now with Lincoln Riley, but Kevin Wilson before and Mike Leach way back when, that they're open to different strategic ties. And the fact that they do have that balance, the 1-2 punch in the running game, the fact that they've developed quarterbacks more often than not. Offensive lines have been good. I think that is it. It's the balance. And how many teams can you name that have, you know, a distinct identity? It's a distinct successful identity. 7, 9, 13. Yeah. Oklahoma's one of them. That's unique.
Yeah. And from my perspective, I'm not so much worried about the identity as I am the ability to just prove that they know how to use the pieces.
Yes.
Right. That was the question as we headed into the 2015 season. They bring over Lincoln Riley, who at previous stops loved to throw the football. Well, Oklahoma had a freshman who broke records in Samaje Perine because of his ability to run the football. What were they going to do? Now, it took Lincoln Riley a little while to figure out that ground game.
Right.
But ultimately, they did a pretty good job mixing and matching and keeping defenses honest. What's unique to me is just their ability. Maybe it's Lincoln Riley, maybe it's Bob Stoops, whoever it is, their ability to use all the pieces. Now, it's not just unique to Oklahoma. There are other coaches around the country who are really successful because they do the same thing. But that's a unique quality, generally speaking, in college football. And if you're an Oklahoma fan, I think that's what you should feel best about.
I will also add, it is the only offense in the country that when they do something good, if they do something successfully, it elicits the worst fight song in the country.
Do you think so?
Oh, yeah.
Worst fight song.
Oh, absolutely. Cool, because they don't vary anything. They don't play other songs. And Rocky Top at least
Rocky Top's the
woo.
Worst. Rocky Top's
no,
that, the worst.
I get to scream out woo, and I'm good with it.
Rocky Top to me is the worst.
I included lyrics to Rocky Top in the one wedding I officiated, and it was a hit because the bride is a Vol.
Not a fan.
I sat next
to the Tennessee band at a Tennessee Notre Dame game back in the day when I was younger. Sat next to Mama H. We sat next to the band, and it scarred us for life.
Mm-hmm.
That's all I'm saying about that. It does happen. All right. I'm going back to the well.
Please.
This is from last week. What is the appropriate emo band for each conference? Now, I will add.
Oh, God.
We got a ton of response when we started talking pop punk and emo. Way, way, way more than I expected.
Yeah.
I thought that was going to be frowned upon here. Apparently not. People are into this thing.
Right.
I have some suggestions. And I don't necessarily need you to come up with a better suggestion. I just need you to grade my logic here.
Okay.
All right. SEC.
Mm-hmm.
I'm saying Jimmy Eat World.
Why is that?
If you survey some of the other pop punk and emo bands from late 90s, early 2000s,
right,
many of them point to Jimmy Eat World as sort of one of their primary influences.
Okay.
All right. They also had more hits than I think a lot of people know.
Okay.
So SEC, Jimmy Eat World, just because they were kind of a pillar in the whole pop punk emo thing.
Yeah, I would find a band, and I'm trying to think about it, who takes themselves very, very seriously.
Like 30 Seconds to Mars? That's not quite pop punk
or
emo.
That is not in the same world. The one I'm positive about is Blink-182 is a Pac-12 band.
Okay.
Blink-182, it's fun, it's wide open, influential. I think that's the way to go with the Pac-12. Big Ten is sort of older.
It's older, but they're trying to like reinvent themselves and
trying to refresh,
kind of trying to be a hybrid of a bunch of different conferences. So I'm thinking Fall Out Boy,
a super group. Yeah. Fall Out Boy is not bad. And they're from the Midwest. They're from Chicago.
Right. Right.
I think that's fair.
I think Panic would be a good ACC emo band because they've really only gotten 2-3 really solid hits and the rest of it's kind of been garbage.
Right.
So just from a top-heavy perspective, I say Panic as the ACC.
Okay. Reliant K feels like a Mountain West. I'm just going geography at this point.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm very bad at the assigning things.
Yeah, I'm not.
Other things.
I'm not great at it, but I thought it was interesting. And we got a ton of response when we started talking emo, so I figured we would go there with it. All right.
We got a question from a great Twitter handle.
Yes.
The gentleman's name is Jimmy, but Soulful Panda. Wants to know, and this plays into both our rec league backgrounds, how hard should one compete when it comes to beach volleyball with strangers? So you've played in rec leagues. I've played in rec leagues. It hasn't necessarily specifically been beach volleyball, but certainly a consummate team game.
By the way, beach volleyball is the worst.
It's not great.
It's the worst.
But you potentially get to see people in bathing suits.
There are perks.
Yeah.
There are perks, but it's of all the beach activities, I think it's one of the worst.
Okay.
Yeah. I think it comes down to that too. Like, is there a guy or girl in a bathing suit on the other side or even on your side that you're trying to impress and show your playful side?
I've had a friend in this exact scenario.
Okay. I have a friend who was in this scenario and ended up getting married. So actually, he successfully executed the scenario.
I have a friend who has done that as well in Chicago, which you would not necessarily associate with beach volleyball.
Big beach volleyball town, right?
Yeah. I would say be competitive, but not so much that it turns off people, even if you're not trying to impress anybody on that level. Be competitive, be true to yourself, but don't be an a-hole because it's just beach volleyball.
I'm thinking Owen Wilson in Wedding Crashers competitive.
Okay.
You know, the flag football scene, Rachel McAdams.
Yes.
Sort of playful, into it. Now, if there's someone on the other side that you've sworn a blood oath against, then that's different. You know, then all
that's more Owen Wilson and Meet the Parents.
Right, exactly.
Okay.
Exactly. I think we're tracking here.
This is a very interesting question. I'm going to go right into bathroom etiquette.
Okay.
Craig.
Yeah.
How long in a relationship before pulling out the open door deuce, Ty?
Open door. I don't know if I go open door now.
I do not believe I have ever been in a relationship where I've gone open door deuce.
No, I don't.
I think just let that be your time. Let that be his or her time.
Yeah, I'm not really tracking here. That's a weird question, Dan.
Ty, let me follow this up. And I'm trying to figure out if somebody has, I'm trying to figure out who is the person that actually asked this question. It's Mike.
Yeah.
Is there an acceptable volume level to listen to videos while in a bathroom stall? I say, if you need to watch, mute it.
We're talking about
a public or an office bathroom listening to videos.
If you're the guy with the volume on, you're the guy I'm telling my coworkers about, my friends about. You're the person who is the butt of the joke, no pun intended. Can't listen with volume on. I mean, look, it's assumed at this point, what year is it? 2016. April of 2016. It's assumed by now that there's probably some use for the phone while you're in there, just for entertainment purposes, to pass the time, move things along, if you will.
Absolutely.
There's no
literally and figuratively.
Right. There's no need to flaunt that. Everybody knows. Don't do that. Got to go mute.
Yeah, I can't imagine a video that is so of the moment that you can't wait 1 minute to watch. Unless it was, no idea what that video is.
Here's the precarious situation I found myself in.
Yeah.
I've already watched a video in that scenario and unexpectedly laughed at the top of my lungs.
Of course, because there's a video that's so tantalizing with the headline that you have to click it. I don't know. It maybe something with Carl Lewis singing again.
Oh God.
Just because if I could confuse somebody with Carl Lewis singing the national anthem again while they were peeing in the bathroom, I think I might have to. But that's not for me fully.
All right. Let's go back to college football.
Yes.
Tangentially. Mm-hmm. I want to come back to the bathroom stuff. We got a lot.
Oh, I've got many more.
I mean, I don't want to come back to the bathroom stuff, but I think we should.
Yes.
This one from Chad. Let's say you have a relatively large budget.
Mm-hmm.
You can create your quote unquote perfect entertainment and college football viewing room in your home.
Yes.
What do you put in it? Mm-hmm. How many screens? How many seats? Do you have a bar, a second kitchen? Is it themed? Most importantly, what do you name it? A family friend named his the Stonehaven in. Sounds like a place you go to get murdered, to be quite honest.
I think that's great.
So I was at a fantasy baseball draft this weekend. You play fantasy baseball? I know you like baseball. Do you play fantasy baseball?
Of course not. I used to, and I used to be very good.
You are a baseball fan, though.
Yes.
Dodgers fan, right?
I'm a Dodgers fan when I am awake to watch Dodger games. Yes.
Fair enough. This gentleman had about as close to a perfect basement situation as I think I've ever seen. Now, he built this house from the ground up, but he had his own bar with a tap.
Mm-hmm.
He had a TV behind the bar mounted on the wall, a smaller TV. And then on a different wall, he had a larger TV, again, mounted on the wall, and a nice sectional couch down there with a good speaker system. So regardless of how many people you had over, regardless of whether you were at the bar or sitting on the couch, he sort of had you covered. I thought that was a pretty basic setup. Mm-hmm. I don't know if he had a name for it, but I feel like having the bar down there, even if you're not like a huge drinker, even if you're not even into that, it just kind of gives you a different ambiance and a sports
nice
bar
to have.
Feel. Yeah. So I think that is a key component.
Okay. So here's what I'm saying. I'm saying if you want to go three TVs, you can. I'm good with two TVs. Definitely harder to pay attention to anything more than three.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
I would say you get some surround sound. You go big with the couch. You go a big coffee table. Have you ever seen the coffee tables with the lift tops, Ty?
Oh, yeah. Those are cool.
Got to go with that. Actually, just got one. Just so the eating situation is taken care of and it's easy and it's close by and there's no issues. I'm good with having a fridge nearby. Always name it, you know, even if it's like a separate room with a door, put a placard on the door, really go for it if you're allowed to. I have named it's a home office type thing in my new apartment. It's not a full bedroom. It's not like a den. It's just like a tiny 8x10 foot room, but my couch is in there and that's where I'll be podcasting from when I podcast from home. Working title, but I think it's sort of set in stone at this point because that is the Dan Cave. That is the Dan Cave. So I think you should definitely name it. And it has to be good for eating and you got to have good sound.
I had a friend who had a cool basement. It wasn't one that he built on his own. We used to hang out there when we were in high school.
Right.
Called it the Dave Cave.
Yep. Why not? Sure.
So the cave thing, I think, has got some legs to it. Yeah, I need to think more about this, but probably no more than two TVs. How big a TV are you going for? Is that contingent on the size of the room?
Yeah.
Or do you just have a general size in mind?
I'd love to go 70 or 80.
80's a big, that's a big TV.
That's a big TV. I can't do it in my 8x10 foot room.
No,
but
that's a big TV.
Right. Second part of his question is favorite cocktail recipe. Do you have a cocktail? Do you have a go-to? I'm not a big drinker. I have one that I like to do very rarely, but
I tell you, just because I've been going to a lot of weddings over the past, let's say 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if mimosas count as a cocktail.
Wow, Ty.
I don't know. Do they count as a cocktail?
You order mimosas at weddings?
I've had a mimosa at a wedding.
Wow.
Yeah. I'm not ashamed
of it. Was
it
a brunch wedding?
No.
You sidle up to a bar and, hey, my brother.
I've done the mimosa thing, yeah.
Hey, my brother, throw a mosa Ty's way.
But you see, here's the thing. I've got the wedding ring on now. Bartender thinks it's for wife Kate.
Ty orders mimosas. Okay, fair. The cocktail that I like, and I've done it a couple times, the name that I've seen it called is the Nor'easter. It's bourbon, lime juice, ginger beer, and a little bit of maple syrup. Sort of a tangy.
It's a lot of action right there, yeah. A
lot of action, but it's very, very good. Very refreshing. You do it on the rocks. Very good. Look it up, a Nor'easter.
Yeah, I'm thinking that rum and Coke or vodka and Sprite doesn't count as a cocktail. But
no, it does.
That's a little more upscale. A little more upscale, right. Dan. All right, here's one. This one comes to us from our good friend at RealPenLive on Twitter.
We answered this question last week, I think.
When will they bring the statue back?
I think it's worth asking again. Ty, when are they bringing the statue back?
Thank you, God. I love that account. That's the best account on Twitter, RealPenLive.
They're going to blurb that on the back of their book of only PenLive comments.
That's the best Twitter account on the internet. I love it.
At what point, Ty, at what point in dating is it acceptable to start bringing someone to a wedding as a date?
Wow, good question. I feel like you're the better person to answer this question because I'm an old married man now. But at what point was it comfortable for you to bring the solid girlfriend to, I mean, by the time my wedding came around, you guys had been an item for quite some time, but at what point did you start considering this as something you could do without nuking the whole relationship?
The first wedding we went to together, we started dating at the very sort of end of August, beginning of September of 2014.
Yeah.
So the first wedding we went to was April. That was the beginning of that, the previously noted road trip. So that's what, like 3-7-ish months? I would have gone to a wedding with her, I don't know, 4, 5, 6 in there. If you're sure that this is going somewhere serious, if like you've met parents and she passes the road trip test and, you know, she's hung out with your friends and you're sort of almost positive that this is a situation where she or he will meet people important to you and everybody is going to like the situation, I think you just go for it.
Yeah, I mean, the question is, can you invite someone to the wedding before there's like an official label or official understanding on the state of the relationship? I feel like that's kind of the point of no return.
No, you got to have that talk first.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
Got to have that talk first.
Yeah. All right, let's go to Alex, who wrote in on Facebook. He says, can I get a ruling on quote-unquote third-party jerseys?
We've discussed this before.
We've discussed this time and time again. Alex, I think, is probably a newer subscriber. He's a Penn Stater. Hello, Alex. Thanks for writing in. He is touching on a topic near and dear to our heart. Mm-hmm. We need to get Rich from Boulder, Colorado on this program to talk about it.
Right.
I feel like Rich in Boulder, Colorado, who's listened to this program for eons now, this is like his life's work. And he takes pictures of these things. I'm serious.
Yeah,
he takes pictures. He calls into the Reverb line. We have a strong anti third party jersey stance on the Solid Verbal. We have since our very humble beginnings back in 2008. Mm-hmm. So I'd say if you're going to a game between like LSU and Alabama, please don't be the guy wearing the Washington State jersey. It just sort of makes you
enjoy college football.
Right. It sort of makes you just like, I don't know, more the butt of the joke again, as opposed to someone who's actively cheering for, rooting for, paying attention to the football game.
May I make an amendment? May I amend our stance? I think there is a threshold. I think there is a level. If you go so absurd and so out of the ordinary, so I'm not talking about like you're going to Rockies, you know, a Rockies Reds game and you're wearing a Mariners jersey. You're wearing, you know, Felix Rodriguez or something like that. Is he still on the Mariners?
Who's that?
Is that, what's his name? Oh, Felix Hernandez, excuse me.
King Felix, yeah, he's still on.
King Felix still on the Mariners.
Still on the Mariners.
See, that to me is just like, I also enjoy this sport we are all watching. That is dumb to me. But if you are at El Clasico, if you are in, you know, if you're in Spain or you are at a, I'm trying to think of the opposite of a very rudimentary or.
Well, here's an example, and it's far different from El Clasico.
Right.
I was at the NCAA tournament game several years ago, the first round games when they were down in Philadelphia. And I saw someone wearing a vintage, I don't even know if it's considered vintage, but this was an old school Denver Nuggets Mahmoud Abdul-Rauf jersey.
Okay.
That is so far outside the norm.
Was it an LSU game?
It was not an LSU game. No.
Oh, okay.
It was just kind of there. And it was so unique and so novel that kind of skirted any wrongful judgment for it being a third party jersey.
Yeah, if you're at a Minnesota Iowa game and you're wearing a Hokkaido Nippon Ham Fighters jersey,
yeah,
I'm great with that. If you're at El Clasico and you're wearing a Dante Bichette jersey, wonderful, especially if it's from the Brewers. That's great.
That's
if
when Bichette happens, sure.
If it is like three sports and two levels and six countries removed, really feel free. And that's just creative expression. But if you're at if you're at a hockey game and you just happen to be wearing another hockey jersey, we understand that you like hockey. You're at this game. Relax.
All right, Dan, pick a question.
All right. Next question. I want to go back to bathroom.
Okay.
This one I think is tougher and it sort of exists in a gray area.
By the way, Dan, I don't know if the people at home know this, but what percentage, I would say maybe like a good 11%.
Mm-hmm.
of the G-chat conversations you and I have pertain to bathroom etiquette. I'm very, very opinionated on this.
This is from, it looks like Josh.
Josh.
He asked a multi-part question, but he works at a school where there are gender-neutral faculty restrooms. So teachers of each gender.
Yep.
Am I being dishonest in that whenever I have to use the restroom for a more time-consuming activity, I have adopted, I have adopted the policy of always leaving the toilet seat up when he leaves. By doing so, he has created plausible deniability that if I leave, see a female colleague waiting to enter, I can say, quote, man, someone really did a number on the bathroom, assuming that when she enters and sees the toilet seat up, she will think that I am just poorly trained and not a vile human being. Is this wrong? Ty, do you have the breaking news sound at the ready?
Breaking news!
Women poop too. That is a thing that women do. And they know that.
I feel like this is a genius maneuver.
Okay. I understand that it's embarrassing to leave behind a swamp monster, something really, really awful.
This is a genius maneuver.
After a meatloaf sandwich gone wrong. But on a certain level, if you're working with somebody every day, there's going to be a lady that destroys the bathroom and there's going to be a gentleman that destroys the bathroom. And you got to make peace with all being in it together.
This is like a Garry Kasparov 8 moves ahead caliber maneuver.
Also, I applaud women are smart, and they can see through your bullshit.
Well, maybe they can, but I admire the hustle here.
I do admire the effort.
What's his name again?
Josh.
Josh. I admire the hustle.
So if you work with Josh Crabtree, by the way, a Josh Crabtree that has a Gmail address, he is bombing your bathroom. And don't buy it that he isn't.
Oh, no. Okay. How long should UGA? It's tough to transition from that.
Yeah. So this is just a random question about Georgia. What is the question about Georgia?
From Chris, how long should UGA fans, Georgia fans, give Kirby Smart to win an SEC and national title? Also, what was y'all's opinion of the Cheney hire? I'm not good with how long until he wins. You know, you got to give him some time, first and foremost. And by some time for a new coach, I think to maybe turn it around and make it look like it's headed in a better direction than it was previously, that to me feels like 3 years at a minimum, 3 years.
I think especially because he's not going into a program, say, in the way that Mack Brown left Texas. He's going into a 10-win program in a state full of talent. Not that Texas doesn't have talent, but a program that year in and year out is already competing for the division. So expectations should be high at Georgia, especially with a top-level quarterback coming in. I think 3 years...
3 years.
To be in contention in November, to see progress the first two seasons. And he also asked about the Jim Cheney hire. We've discussed this before.
Oh, yeah.
He's our favorite offensive consultant, just hopping from program to program.
He's a contractor.
Yeah, he's an offensive contractor. We've heard about defense contractors, defense contractors. Yeah, he will rest not until every single program in the country has a B-plus offense. So it's fine. It's good. They'll be all right. And they will recruit very well, and they will put good defenses on the field. And in 2018... I don't think it's unreasonable to expect Georgia to be a top 10 program competing into November, to be in that national, to be in the playoff conversation.
All right, let's go to Ian Winkelstern.
Yeah.
In Ann Arbor, he says, Tyler and Daniel, I'm getting married next month. For some reason, I am in charge of a music playlist for this event. What are some songs the people absolutely need to hear at a reception? I asked this question because I know you and I are going to disagree on this.
Okay.
And we had a disagreement, and I'm not going to lie, I'm still a little mad at you about this one.
What did I do?
I'm still a little mad at you about this one.
Okay.
You had some real beef with me playing Journey at the end of my wedding.
Oh, yeah. That's a bad song.
You had some real problems with this.
So I have problems with it, just sort of broadly speaking. But if that's a song that means a lot to you and your bride, I'm okay with it.
All right.
This is what I want from wedding songs.
What do you want? What do you want as a wedding guest, Dan?
As a wedding guest, what do I want to hear?
Yeah.
I want to hear songs that people know, it doesn't have to be the newest club banger. Just songs that people know, songs that people can dance to. And it could be old, it could be relatively new. And I want to hear Whitney Houston's I Want to Dance with Somebody.
Got to have that, yeah.
Because everybody wants to dance with somebody. Other songs that I think are great, I think the remix to Ignition is good.
Oh, yeah.
You sort of start going 90s R&B, if that's your era. I'm assuming it is, just because most of our listeners are somewhere between 22 and 38, I would assume, in that sort of region. Things that are familiar, things that will get people dancing. Yes, I know that's a hot take right there.
Very hot take, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, play Push It by Salt and Pepa.
I've got a rule of thumb.
What do you have?
I've got a rule of thumb. As you know, I did this recently.
But I don't know how you dance to Don't Stop Believin'.
Well, it's not so much intended as a dance song. It's intended as like an end of the night type of song, which is why I played it at the end of the night.
I want you to play Too Close by Next.
Okay.
Because it's about dancing near people when you have a boner.
Here is what I would say. All right.
Yeah.
By the way, you know that I've got the whole wedding thing down pat. I was at a wedding this past Friday. You know, mm-hmm. I like to make lines on things.
Yes.
I set the over-under at 215 for the best man speech. It came in just 0.07 of a second under that line.
Wow.
All right. This is a life achievement for me. I think I'm stopping. But here's what I'd say, Mr. Winkle Stern. Congratulations.
My heart. Yeah.
Congratulations to you. What I'd say is this. Find a genre that you and that you think your guests are going to appreciate. A couple mm-hmm. genres. Doesn't need to be just one. Don't go for the song of the moment. If you're putting together a playlist, go a little bit older. Because you won't go wrong. Most people know those songs. You want songs that, as Dan said, people know. People are going to get up and dance to. People are going to belt out the lyrics to. I would go for those types of songs more than like the latest song. Unless it's like a really big current pop hit.
Mm-hmm.
Don't reach. I think
Hey Ya is a great wedding song.
Hey Ya is a good one. And I wasn't even a big fan of that song. But believe me, that plays at a wedding.
It's also interactive. People can clap at the clappy parts. It's good.
I will offer this once and one time only. Mm-hmm. If you want, Mr. Winkelstern,
mm-hmm.
shoot us another email. I can send you the list of songs, the popular songs that really seem to get people going, that I have witnessed and put on my little wedding pool playlist thing.
Mm-hmm.
I'll give him some insight if he wants it.
And I will give an addendum to that offer from Ty, and I will let you know if you do say yes and you want Ty's list, just know ahead of time it's 80% Sean Paul.
That's right.
It's 80% Sean Paul. Sean DePaul!
All right.
Next question.
Where are we going next? Got Let's time for like three
weddings.
More.
Let's stay on weddings. We have time for as many as we want.
Okay.
Joe, I'm getting married next spring. What's the number one thing that he should stay on his toes about? I have strong opinions about this, but you have been married. I have not.
Well, you go first. I got the hammer here.
Bathroom availability needs to be known by everybody there. Everybody needs to be fed in a timely fashion. I'm talking cocktail hour. I'm talking dinner, lunch, whatever. And everybody needs to have their thirst quenched. Because base level, if your guests are uncomfortable, you are a bad host. And that's anything beyond that. That's your purview. Make sure people are not hungry, not thirsty, and not having bladders swelling to the sizes of cantaloupe.
Yeah. I would say, very broadly speaking,
mm-hmm.
Expect that there will definitely be something that happens in the last week in the buildup mm-hmm. to your wedding mm-hmm. that will get you feeling anxious about the wedding. And I don't mean whether or not you should go through with it. I just mean about the festivities. Something will occur that will make you a little bit unnerved. So just plan for that in advance. I would also say, if you're getting married next spring, you've got a whole year of planning to go through.
Yeah.
And I would just say that be prepared for the notion that you have zero leverage when it comes to bargaining prices. You will be prepared by the end of your wedding planning process to pay $50, I'd say, for just about anything in this world.
Yeah. And I would say, no matter, you know, people always underestimate with a lot of things. So no matter how much Sean Paul you think you should have played, add more. Add more Sean Paul.
Add more Sean Paul.
Add more Sean Paul. Everybody loves Sean DePaul.
Okay.
I like this. I like a question from Jake. That's sort of near the end of our Google Doc. I'm trying to see something else that really... Jason, it sort of has to do with Jake's question. Jason says, what's the best kitchen slash house gadget or item to put on a wedding registry that you wouldn't actually spend your own money on? I've got three answers for this. Mm. Actually, 2.5 answers.
Yes.
One, and this is from the Tony Kornheiser show, fire extinguisher.
You don't
think to buy it for your place, but if somebody gets you a fire extinguisher and you need it, especially for something serious, it automatically becomes the greatest gift that anybody has ever given you.
Okay.
Two, steak knives. I'm not a big steak eater, so it's not as big of a deal for me, or sort of just a hunk of meat. But I will also say, you probably yourself don't think, especially if you just sort of cook on and off, that you need a really good knife, just a good chef's knife. But you need a good chef's knife.
I did the knife thing. It's been great.
It's weird to spend like $100 or $120 or even more, or right around that, on a knife. Make sure it has heft, a good grip, a good size blade. I think that's the move, because you don't think about it, because you just assume whatever you have in your kitchen is good enough.
Yeah, I would say serving dishes.
How often are you serving?
I've been serving more than I expected, Dan. And I never would have bought that on my own. I just would have used the biggest plate in the cupboard.
Who are you serving?
Well, we got family come over. We have friends come over.
How often is family coming over?
In the summertime, have you seen the size of our deck out here?
And I've seen pictures.
Yeah, that's what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
People love this place.
Fair.
So, yeah, it's not something that is like the sexiest option, but it is useful. And you wouldn't buy it on your own.
All right. We have a question. Let me find this question. It is from longtime listener. Did I not copy it onto the doc? It's from our friend Arden McCormick.
Ards.
Good name.
Yeah.
Lady name.
Yeah.
These are things I learn.
Okay.
I'm finding it right now. Do you have it in front of you, Ty?
I definitely do not.
I have it right here.
Okay.
Dan and Ty, my boyfriend introduced me to the Solid Verbal some time ago, and I feel as if I need to thank him accordingly. What in the world is an appropriate reciprocal gift for such a life-altering gesture? How nice is that?
Wow.
We are both avid college football and Solid Verbal fans. We even occasionally wear our Solid Verbal shirts on the same day, despite living states away from each other. He even supports my placement of Dan, Ty. I hope you're paying attention.
I'm listening.
As my number one celebrity crush.
Wow. How about that? That's a low bar for celebrity.
How dare you,
Arden.
So
but
clearly he deserves some recognition. Any advice would be much appreciated. Thanks for all the great work y'all do.
Do we do autographed pictures? Can we do autographed pictures? Because that could...
I have autographed pictures of West Coast Kevin that I can send.
Okay, well, let's do that.
So what do you think, two podcast fans, college football fans in a long-distance relationship, what do you think one party can do for the other party to show their appreciation and love?
Oh, my gosh. This question's impossible.
Come on, Ty. Dig deep into that mimosa-filled heart of yours.
But Bluetooth earbuds? I don't know. I'm thinking very literally. I don't know. I don't have an answer here.
I would say the food is always great. Just college football and food go really well together. Obviously, we blather on about food way too much on this show, but a lot of stuff is mail order. And even from big cities, look it up. A lot of big places in New York, LA, Chicago, or whatever. If there's a particular type of food, I think that's a great long distance gift. Right. I'm assuming one or the other in this long distance relationship has baked or something. If not, and we do have a question about a dude baking, send care packages, just random care packages, just because, and include, a shirt of their team or some sort of college football shirt that they weren't expecting, because obviously apparel seems to be a big deal.
Buy them a PlayStation or something. I don't know. It's expensive, but
not a play. That's all right.
If somebody showed up, if the solid girlfriend showed up at your door and said, here, Dan, here's a PS4.
Yeah.
You wouldn't turn that down.
That's super personal.
It isn't. Well, it isn't, but at least you know what you're getting there.
Right.
You know that the person you're getting it for is going to approve of it.
Right.
I don't have an answer. This is a weird question.
Come on, Ty. Have you ever been in a long distance relationship?
I tried it once. I wouldn't recommend it.
Yeah. As did I.
Yeah. I would not recommend that.
Okay. But let's assume that they're going to be in the same place in a relatively short amount of time. Hopefully.
Yeah, right.
When it was good. But use that part of your brain that you've buried. How would you show somebody that you care? Let's say Kate got a new job where she was gone for like 2 or 3 weeks at a time.
Right. Yeah.
Aside from tasteful nudes, married couple, you got to do what you got to do. How are you showing Kate you care?
I'm not answering this question. This is a weird question. I don't got an answer for this.
I think one of the big things, in the same way that, because we very much are in a relationship, you and I.
Sure.
I was very happy when you received your Notre Dame Pinstripe Bowl Championship hat.
Pinstripe Bowl Championship hat.
I say troll the hell out of this guy. I don't know if they're fans of the same team, but certainly they have to disagree, whether it's, even if it's not college football, if it's baseball, if it's an NFL team. I say troll them with just something insane that you either create, a shirt trolling them, a hat trolling them. If it's some NFL team and they were like a division champ in 2003, just the most useless troll job, I think, is always good.
I mean, that's fine. I have no answer for this. It's a weird question. We got time for two more questions.
All right. Two more questions. Ty, who is in their job? I guess who gets fired first, Charlie Strong or James Franklin?
James Franklin.
Yeah, I think that's right.
I think it I think it could come off the swivel for Big Game James this year.
Yeah,
I'm a little worried it could come off the swivel.
The jumping ship thing makes it tough. Yeah. From Burn the Bunker, how does my daughter decide between her top three colleges for fall?
Oh, wow.
Georgia.
Wow.
Baylor. And let's assume ASU means Arizona State and not Arkansas State. The Honors College at Arizona State. Important to her, and it might not be in this order, football, food, academics, and fitness. So I'm assuming some sort of outdoorsy town, hiking, swimming, running, parasailing, whatever.
If it is in that order, I'd go Georgia. If it's football, food, academics, then fitness, I go UGA. If it's fitness first or in the top two, I probably go ASU. Mm-hmm. I don't feel strongly about Baylor. Baylor's a fine institution. We know a lot of great people from Baylor. I feel like Baylor might be skewed a little bit more of the four things I see here food's big in Texas.
Yeah.
I would, if I were ranking the three, I'd probably
get some kolaches there and Waco.
I go Georgia, yeah. ASU, and Baylor. But Georgia and ASU are like 1 and 1A.
First of all, I like that these are all schools south of the Mason-Dixon line.
Yeah.
Don't, if you can avoid going to a cold school, do it. I'd probably lean ASU just because I don't think there's a huge discrepancy. The big discrepancy is I think Athens is the best college town of these three.
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking.
You can really get out of college whatever you want. Fitness-wise, I'm avoiding humidity. And that's why I would eliminate Georgia and Baylor. I'd probably go ASU. I think it'd be a fun time. Ultimately, yeah, I'm going Arizona State. I'm choosing this based on having that broadcast school. I think it's the Walter Cronkite.
Right.
And just shying away from humidity. I think ASU is the answer. Good food. You can get In-N-Out Burger. You can get
In-N-Out Burger. There you go.
You can't get In-N-Out.
There you go. That's the only criteria you need.
Food In-N-Out. Is listed here, Ty.
In-N-Out Burger.
You can get good Mexican food. You can get In-N-Out. You can get to various places in the country relatively easily out of Phoenix. I think that's my
good move. Answer. In-N-Out
that's
Burger.
That's my move.
Animal style. All right. Final question here.
Final question.
I will save you the agony of asking who's going to win the Masters. By the way, it's Jason Day.
Adam Scott. I could not nail Adam Scott out of a lineup, but okay.
All right. Final question.
I think the mic question is pretty good.
About a
destination wedding in Southern California.
That's where I'm going.
Oh, beautiful. Let's do it.
Striker Obi on Twitter. Final question.
We do have an obituary, by the way, that we have to get to after this.
Oh, yes. My fiance and I are getting married in Southern California. We are from Florida. Mm-hmm. Any tips to ensure our guests enjoy our destination wedding?
Right.
Yes.
I'm from Southern California.
You are from Southern California. I would suggest that wherever possible, take care of transportation for your guests, whether it's from the hotel to your reception, from the reception. Transportation, if you've got people coming from out of town, will be something that I think they will very, very much appreciate. Mm-hmm. I would also make sure that everyone knows explicitly when things are happening and where things are happening. Because I've been to destination weddings before, mm-hmm. where people showed up at the wrong place. You know, it's never a great thing in terms of having people feel totally comfortable about where they're going. So right. make sure that that's outlined pretty well. And I'd say above all else, make sure the person or people that are planning on your behalf in Southern California are really with it. Make sure they've yes. got their I's dotted and their T's crossed, because that person will get you through the wedding and make sure that everything's planned accordingly. So make sure you got a strong wedding planner. Transportation would be nice. And even if you're printing out a list of instructions that gets yeah. sent to all the people who have RSVP'd, I think that goes a long way towards ensuring everyone's happiness.
Southern California is stupidly huge and spread out, and it's sprawl, and it is difficult to get around because there's traffic everywhere. Not that there is traffic or there isn't traffic everywhere else in big city areas in this country, but LA is just so spread out that I would recommend places as close as possible to your wedding, just because it's difficult to navigate sometimes. I would do your best to recommend restaurants nearby where you recommend people stay, and give people ample, not even just locations. I think you were totally right with that, but directions. Don't go on this street ever yep. between this hour and this hour. It is a disaster. If you have those people that can help you out with that. Yep. Local knowledge is extremely important. But yes, if you are getting married in Orange County, don't recommend that people stay in Manhattan Beach or Santa Monica or Hollywood, just because they're going to be late to your wedding. They're going to be late to rehearsal dinner. It's going to be a disaster. And let me tell you something, Ty. As somebody who lived in LA for 25 years, something in that range, I will say there is nothing worse than sitting in traffic, getting to a place, and then having to find a parking spot yeah, 15 worse. Minutes later.
Parking's your thing.
Figure out not just directions, but parking options. And whether that's sort of trying to block off a certain area, or there's this parking garage around the corner, it's the cheapest one. You got to do a ton of research, because you don't want people showing up to such a happy thing in a foul mood. So overplan, keep everybody in a compact area, do your due diligence ahead of time, and make sure everything is taken care of. And it's always tough with a destination wedding. And I would also say this, because the proliferation of Uber and Lyft and all those services has become so ubiquitous, try, if you haven't already figured out where your wedding is, and hopefully it is in this kind of place, try to make sure it's not super far away from one of those types of services, that yeah. people aren't going to be waiting 45 minutes for an Uber or something like right. that, because you want people to have a good time and drink their mimosas at the bar.
Yes, that's right.
And you want them to be safe and have the option of saying, oh, look, there's an Uber a minute away.
Hey, you can judge away. Me if you want about the mimosas, but I don't really care.
It's okay.
You're stuck with me now. All right. Obituary.
Yes. That's what I would say. Sad time in the Solid Verbal universe, because
yeah.
the actor who played Admiral Akbar has passed away. And so if you'd like to give me a few seconds, Ty.
Yes.
It's a trap.
It's a trap.
It's a trap. It's a trap. It's a trap. It's a trap. Thank you for your service, thank Admiral.
You. Yes, thank you. Admiral Akbar passes away.
Yeah.
All right. So look, we did two question shows in a row here.
Yeah.
We're going to do some football again next week.
Mm-hmm.
I am bumping the Verbies off until 2 weeks from now. That's when okay. they will be released. It gives us a little bit more time to finish up all the odds and ends that we need to finish up, but they're going to be really okay. spectacular. So mm-hmm. look forward to that. Also, if you haven't signed up yet for the Solid Verbal newsletter of intent, which you can find at solidverbal.com or on yeah. our Facebook page at facebook.com/solidverbal, we had a number of people who wanted to get in on the t-shirts the first time around, but they couldn't because they sold out in about 38 minutes or something crazy like that.
Yes.
We do have another run, just 100 t-shirts
available
to the public. Again, all proceeds will go to help defeat DIPG in honor of our esteemed guest and good friend, Brandon Hoffman, and his daughter, Avery, and her brave struggle with DIPG.
Yes.
We will make all of those shirts available if you subscribe to our newsletter of intent at some point within the next week. We initially said Friday, but it's going to be at some point within the next week. Mm-hmm. You're going to get something in your inbox. You can sign up and get your shirt at that point.
Yeah.
Give us a few weeks to send them out. We're still like fulfilling these orders on our own, so it might take a few weeks for us to get it to you.
Yes.
But it will again be $25. Supplies are extremely limited, so if you are interested, sign up for the newsletter and pay attention to your inbox.
Yeah, we make zero profit on this run of shirts, so we feel passionately about this. Sign up, and once again, Ty, where can they sign up?
Sign up at solidverbal.com, as well as on our Facebook page at facebook.com/solidverbal. Click on the sign up button that you see in the header, and you can find the sign up form there.
On solidverbal.com, it's on the right hand side?
It's on the right rail, yeah.
Yes, on the right rail, you'll see the newsletter of intent sign up field.
All right. Well, this has been fun, Dan. A lot of great questions. We appreciate everyone who wrote in.
I was going to say, especially Josh Crabtree. Mystery pooper.
Mystery pooper, Josh Crabtree.
Yeah.
Thank you again for emailing. Don't forget, you can always get in touch at solidverbal@gmail.com. We are on Facebook. We are on Twitter and Instagram as well. Don't forget to check us out at itunes.com/solidverbal. Appreciate you again downloading, subscribing, listening, sharing, what have you.
Yes.
Thanks for coming along for the ride with us here as we have a little bit of fun in the meantime. For that guy over there, Dan Rubenstein, for myself, Ty Hildebrand, thanks again for tuning in. I'll catch you all in a week. Stay solid.
Peace.